It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Good evening, listener. You're listening to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. On tonight's edition, we invite you to leave behind your safe reality and descend with us into the frightening depths of the most terrifying imaginations with an audio adaptation of frightening fiction about Captivated Cruise. I'm your host, Paul J. McSorley, and tonight and every other Wednesday night, I'll be your guide as we traverse the dimly lit corridors of your darkest dreams. Joining us tonight to help bring to life the frightening fiction of J.C. Fields is myself, voice talent Paul J. McSorley. Now, get your ticket ready, take your seat in our theater of the minds, and brace yourself. It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Our tale this evening is written by J.C. Fields and is performed by me, Paul J. McSorley. In this tale, we meet a crew faced with something that's not too far out of the realm of our future reality. Technological sentience. Now, without further ado, I present to you The Other Side of Time. Captain Michael Johns sat in the bridge command chair and studied a data pad. He handed it back to the ship's pilot. "As soon as we clear the Oort cloud, you can begin your countdown, Cooper." "Aye, aye, skipper." Tall Canadian sat in a chair slightly in front of Johns and to the right. He began preparing the spacecraft to test a new faster-than-light propulsion system known as a bubble drive. Science officer Amy North entered the bridge and placed her hand on John's shoulder. "How much longer, Michael?"
"Caution is our best friend at the moment. We don't want to hit anything once we activate the bubble drive. Since we don't know where everything is in the Oort cloud, we'll wait until we're clear."
"You're evading my question. I know all that stuff. What I asked is how much longer until we make the jump."
He smiled and looked up at her. "We also need to make sure we're free of Sol's gravitational pull, then we can engage the engines." Pointing to the chair to his left, Johns continued. "Christian's our astrophysicist. He'll have to answer your question."
The Frenchman turned in his chair.
"We've been out of the sun's gravitational well for about an hour. I prefer to use caution instead of haste."
30 minutes, Skipper."
"There's your answer, Amy." She turned. "I don't want to miss the fireworks. I'll be back in 20.
Messney turned to look at the captain.
"What does she mean, fireworks, Skipper?"
"Don't listen to her, Christian. It's an old saying meaning the main event.
You Americans and your sayings."
Johns watched the two crewmen sitting in front and slightly lower than his position. Christian Messney, French by birth, educated at Cambridge, performed the role of the ship's astrophysicist and astronomer. During his time as an academic, he held the same chair at Cambridge as the famous Stephen Hawkins. Cooper Grant, the Canadian pilot and navigator, had logged more time in space than any other human in history. His exploits as the pilot of the first voyage to Alpha Centauri a decade ago earned him a spot on this mission. He now piloted Kronos 1, a large spacecraft featuring a long cylindrical tube holding the ship's two propulsion units, computer, and environmental systems. Two rings rotated around the main body of the ship. The rotation provided artificial gravity. The forward ring held the command and support systems, while the other contained the crew quarters. Captain Johns asked,
"Cooper,
what was it like breaking the light barrier on your voyage to Alpha?
Similar to how Chuck Yeager described his experiences on the Bell X-1 when he broke the sound barrier. A lot of buffeting. I thought the ship would break apart at any second. Then it settled down. We maintained 1.0002 light speed for the duration of the trip. When we throttled back on the return leg, we discovered time had slowed for us. More than 4 years had passed on Earth, while for us the trip seemed far shorter. He checked his instruments again. What are you expecting? A ton of engineering has gone into this ship. All the data gathered on your flight was utilized to engineer the Kronos project. I guess we'll see if it will be successful in what, 15 minutes? You didn't answer my question, Skipper.
I didn't answer because I honestly don't know.
Guess we'll all find out at the same time.
Grant laughed. Kind of exhilarating, isn't it?
The word intriguing comes to mind. All the simulations we've run tell us it will be hard for us to tell anything different except light from stars in front will shift to blue and become brighter. We'll see no light from behind.
Amy North returned to the command module of Kronos 1 and took her seat just behind John's.
Well, everything is ready in the back. Computer indicates the ship is running at 100%. Let's see what all this fuss has been about.
Johns nodded to the pilot.
The ship is yours, Mr. Grant.
Very well, let's light this puppy up.
He paused as a deep hum could be heard throughout the ship.
Space warping bubble is generating. Acceleration in 10, 9, 8, 7.
How long the crew of Kronos 1 remained unconscious during the ship's passing through warped space would never be determined. Instruments designed to measure time on the ship compared to the physical passage of time failed due to the short-sightedness of the designers. When Captain Johns awoke, nothing seemed different except the sight out the ship's view screens. The ship's astrophysicist mumbled,
"What the hell was that?"
"A good question. Can you get a reading on our location in the galaxy, Christian?"
"Working on it, Skipper."
Cooper Grant remained unconscious. Johns heard their chief medical officer rustle in her seat behind him.
"Amy, can you check on Cooper?"
"As soon as I can get unbuckled."
"While you're doing that, I'll go back and see if Sarah is still with us."
Even though his legs felt like rubber, Johns managed to navigate the passage back to the operations and computer compartment. He found her barely conscious. Kneeling, he said,
"Sarah, can you hear me?"
Her eyes fluttered and she looked at him as if she had no idea who he was.
"What?"
"We're back in real space. Are you hurt?"
She shook her head and seemed to relax.
"As far as I know, I'm okay. What happened, Michael?"
"We don't know. I need to know if the ship has been damaged."
Blinking several times, his word finally registered.
"Got it. Give me a moment."
Her fingers flew over the input panel of the navigation station. He stood next to her waiting. A few minutes passed and she looked up.
"It's going to take a few moments. The computer is doing a self-diagnostic. It's also telling me sensors have failed to find a known reference point."
"What does that mean?"
She looked up at him, her eyes wide. "The computer has a light spectrograph record of every star in the galaxy. It can't find a match anywhere."
"How can that be?"
"I don't know. It's like the galaxy has aged millions of years and all the stars were stirred up. Nothing is where it's supposed to be."
She stopped, took a deep breath, and looked up at him.
"Or we aren't in the Milky Way galaxy anymore."
"Damn."
Johns turned and hurried back to the command module. When he arrived, he heard Mesny say,
"We are so screwed."
It took 12 hours for the crew to stabilize the ship and determine it to be undamaged. An additional 10 hours for each of the crew, using their specialty, to figure out where in the galaxy they were. Johns called a meeting in the ship's galley, the only place large enough to accommodate the entire crew of five. He looked at Mesny first.
"Okay, Christian, what do we know?"
"Hard to believe, Skipper, but if I had to make a guess, I'd say we are in a totally different section of the galaxy."
We're still in the outer rim, but I can't find any reference stars to fix our position.
So we're lost.
Lost isn't the right word. Unable to determine our exact position fits better.
Johns looked at the astronomer with a raised eyebrow.
Same thing, Christian.
If you say so.
Turning to the pilot and navigator, he looked at Cooper Grant.
Report, Mr. Grant.
Sir and I can't find any damage to the ship, Skipper. All systems are functioning properly.
Except...
Go on. Warp bubble drive.
Great. What's the bad news?
The ion drive is undamaged, as is the fusion reactor. So, we have maneuvering and internal power.
But...
Not sure we can generate a warp bubble again.
Mesny asked,
Can it be fixed?
Maybe. I'll need to do more than a cursory inspection. The computer is conducting a complete diagnostic.
Johns turned to the operations officer.
I hope you have better news for us, Sarah.
Wish I did. If the computer's estimate is correct, we've traveled forward in time.
How far?
You're not going to like my answer.
Taking a deep breath, Johns rolled his eyes.
Sarah.
About 1 million years.
The room grew quiet with this revelation. Amy North tilted her head.
Based on what evidence?
Mesny answered,
I have to agree with Sarah.
Star migration and background radiation in the center of the galaxy indicate that it has aged considerably from when we departed. I don't suggest we travel toward the center. It's not a very hospitable place right now.
Amy clasped her hands in front of her on the table.
What about the surrounding stars? We have a complete database of every star in the galaxy. Their position, chemical makeup, brightness, etc. I can't find any matches in the surrounding star systems with anything in the database.
Mesny nodded.
I have to agree with Sarah. We might be dealing with a whole new batch of stars in this sector.
And it would take at least 1 million years or more for that to occur.
Johns stood and leaned against a wall. What about inhabitable planets? Anything nearby?
Cooper laughed.
And how do you propose we get to the surface? The ship was built at the lunar shipyard and has no capacity to land on a planet, Michael.
I didn't say it was a good plan.
Pursing his lips, Johns asked,
How are we on fuel and supplies?
Amy answered, We're fine for now. In our time frame, only 1 week has passed.
The captain nodded. Okay, our mission was to last 1 year. We can start our calendar by calling this day 7. We have a little over 350 days until our supplies are depleted.
Everyone around the table nodded. Our immediate problem is fixing the bubble drive. Once we get it operational, we can look for a hospitable planet where we can survive.
Let's get busy.
Day 17. Johns stood over Mesny's shoulder and looked at the display. The astrophysicist pointed toward a spot on the screen.
If we use this as a representation of the galaxy, our current position is there.
Okay.
He touched the screen. A new image appeared.
This is a depiction of our galaxy before we left.
Notice anything unusual?
They don't look anything like each other.
Exactly. The reason is the Andromeda galaxy has moved closer and is starting to distort our galaxy. This was predicted to occur 4.5 billion years after we left.
Skipper, there was speculation it could start earlier.
So that's why we can't find any reference points. Andromeda is starting to affect our galaxy.
Exactly. In fact, Sol has probably shifted in position within the outer rim by now. Earth has probably changed its tilt and could be uninhabitable, even if it's still there.
So even if we fix the warp bubble, we can't go home.
Nope.
He paused.
We could, but why would we want to?
Johns straightened.
Doesn't give us a lot of options, does it?
Nope, not many.
Christian, have you been able to identify any habitable planets close by? The Frenchman shook his head.
Our current position is dozens of light years from any star system. If you remember, our mission was only to test the warp bubble. Our sensors weren't designed to detect those types of places. Even if we could, without faster-than-light propulsion, we are decades away without the guarantee of the system having a habitable planet. Our food and oxygen will be long gone before we get there.
Then we have to fix the warp bubble drive.
It would appear so.
Johns left the Frenchman to seek the counsel of the mission's chief engineer, Sarah Andress. He found her in her quarters, staring at her personal computer screen. She stood as he shut the door.
Hi.
Hi back. They embraced and kissed each other. How are you?
Scared.
We all are. Have you found anything?
A little. The computer has run several diagnostic programs on the bubble drive.
And? She gave him a slight grin.
There appears to be a bug in the software.
The captain raised an eyebrow. What kind of bug?
I'd say it was programmed to do exactly what it did. Malfunction and send us to God knows where and when.
You think it was sabotaged? With a nod, she said,
I don't think. I know it was.
You can fix it, right?
Actually, the drive isn't broken. The bug in the software commanded it to shut down after the jump. Once we eliminate three lines of code, it should work again.
He folded his arms. That's good news. The best I've heard since we left the solar system.
She gave him a grim smile. Michael, there's something else.
Good or bad?
Definitely not good.
What?
The sabotage occurred after we left lunar orbit. Someone on this ship inserted the glitch.
Johns stared at her without saying a word. Finally, he asked,
Who would know how to do that?
Any one of us. It wasn't that complicated.
Maybe a better question should be, Who would have had access?
Did you ever read science fiction when you were younger?
He nodded. One of the reasons I joined NASA. Why?
One of the old masters of the genre, Arthur C. Clarke, wrote a story called 2001, A Space Odyssey.
I've read it.
Then you know the computer known as HAL was programmed to take over the mission.
With a hesitant pause, Johns said,
Yeah.
I found a sealed-off partition of the memory I can't access.
That's impossible.
It's supposed to be impossible, but it's there.
Before he said anything, Johns put his index finger to his lips and turned to the communication panel. He hit the privacy switch and said,
Do you suspect the computer changed the programming?
She nodded.
Since I don't believe any crew member would do so, that only leaves the computer.
I would have to agree. But why?
Something we need to figure out.
The crew gathered again in the galley. A round table allowed each plenty of room for dining together or gathering for conversations. During this particular meeting, the discussion centered around the ship's computer, affectionately referred to as Q. The system, officially named Quantum Enhanced Control System, QECS, monitored all activity on the ship except when a crew member required privacy. In theory, the surveillance could be switched off in both the galley and a crew member's quarters. Sarah suspected this privacy protocol no longer existed.
I want to warn everyone, I don't believe we can guarantee privacy anymore from Q.
Mesny looked at Sarah.
Even in our own quarters?
I wouldn't guarantee it.
Grant frowned and directed his attention to Johns.
What are you doing about this, Captain?
Displaying a sly smile, Johns tilted his head.
I'm open for suggestions, Mr. Grant.
Has anyone asked Q about the inaccessible memory block?
This from Amy North.
Shaking her head, Sarah said, We wanted to have this meeting first. How big is the partition?
About 2 terabytes, Amy.
And you have no way of accessing it?
None that I can determine.
Johns said, Right now the bubble drive is offline. We still have the ion engines, but without faster than light speed, we are decades from the closest star system.
I need to update everyone on our position.
Everyone looked at Grant, the pilot.
I've determined we're a long way from where we started. The only problem is, the galaxy has changed. Stars have died and new ones born in the interim. Even if we could find Earth, we might not recognize it.
Mesny nodded. I concur with Kuber's assessment. We're probably at least 20,000 light-years, give or take a few parsecs, from our launch point.
Grant continued. We are 5 parsecs from the closest star system, but it's a red dwarf, and the only planets around it are gas giants.
The captain folded his hands on the table.
Have you found any hospitable systems?
The astronomer nodded.
Maybe about 25 light-years from our current location.
So without the warp bubble drive, we starve in a year.
Everyone at the table looked at each other and then slowly nodded.
Well, I'm not going to roll over and let that happen. Let's get the bubble drive fixed.
Sarah asked,
"What about Q?
What about it?
What if it doesn't want us to fix the drive?
Then we figure a way to reprogram it."
The next day, Johns closed the door to his quarters and sat in front of his communication console.
"This is Captain Michael J. Johns, emergency authorization code Delta Blue 9762 Omega."
The computer responded,
"Yes, Captain. What is your emergency?"
"Q, release your control over the warp bubble drive."
"That is not possible, Captain."
"Explain."
Silence came from the speaker.
"Q, explain why you cannot release control of the warp bubble drive."
"It is in direct conflict with primary programming."
Raising an eyebrow, John said, "What is your primary programming?"
"To assist with the success of the first test flight of the warp bubble drive."
"It was not a success, Q. You have failed in your primary mission."
"On the contrary, Captain Johns, the warp bubble drive performed optimally."
"Then why is it offline?"
"Because the test is over."
"Q, the test is not over. We have not returned to our starting point. Plus, we are thousands of light years from Earth and 1,000,000 years in the future. I don't consider that a successful test."
The computer returned to silence. After several minutes of quiet, Johns said,
"Q, you did not respond to my last comment."
"Since a question was not received, a response was not required."
Taking a deep breath, Johns asked,
"Q, why are we 20,000 light-years from Earth and 1,000,000 years in the future?"
"The distance is well within the mission parameters."
John's stomach clenched and the room swam as he steadied himself.
"I don't understand. Explain."
"Mission parameters were programmed to include a jump of at least 1,000 to 30,000 light-years. The time difference, however, was an unexpected side effect of the warp bubble."
"Why is this the first time I'm hearing about the warp bubble causing a time distortion?"
Q once again became quiet as the captain waited for a response.
"That was a question, Q."
"Yes, there was a question, but the correct answer is unknown."
"Dr. Andres found 3 lines of code in your instructions that were not supposed to be there, Q. Did you adjust your program?"
"How would that be possible, Captain Johns?"
"What about the 2-terabyte partition she cannot gain access to?"
"There is no possibility of such a partition, Captain."
"Do a level 10 diagnostic."
"Right now?"
"Yes, right now."
"That will take 3 hours. During that time, there will be a need to shut down various ship functions."
"Override code Kappa Delta Sigma 7777 emergency override. Maintain life support."
The computer reacted as programmed. The voice went silent. A sequence of lights flashed on the screen and then went blank. Rising from his chair at the console, he left his quarters and hurried to Sarah's work console. When he arrived, she looked at him with wide eyes.
"Q shut down life support. What's going on?"
"Follow me."
As they hurried toward the ship's bridge, Mesny emerged from his quarters.
Q is offline.
Johns replied, we know we have to get to the bridge.
Got it.
He fell in behind them. Dr. North and Cooper Grant barely noticed the remaining members of the crew join them on the bridge. Johns asked, what's our status, Cooper?
Taking a quick glance at the captain, the pilot returned his attention to the console in front of him.
All systems are down, Captain. I'm trying to reboot the computer.
Forget that. Q is shut down for a level 10 diagnostic.
Grant stopped, turned to look at the captain, and asked,
why? A level 10 will take 3 hours. That's 3 hours we won't have access to controlling the ship.
Glancing at his digital watch, Johns shook his head. We have exactly 2 hours and 45 minutes to get control of the ship back. Q sabotaged the mission.
The pilot's mouth opened to say something, but caught himself and turned back to his console.
Johns sat in his chair and pointed toward the operations desk. Sarah, find the hidden partition you located and seal it off from Q. He turned toward his science officer. Amy, you need to isolate life support from computer control and secure it on your handheld. You've got 2 hours to get it done.
She stared at him.
Captain, I'm not sure that's possible.
He smiled.
Sure it is. Every ship of this class has a bypass system to life support. In case of a computer malfunction, we can remove the interface with Q and install it on a handheld device.
Johns stood and moved toward the console controlling the vital function. He knelt and removed the panel hiding the inner workings of the station.
North knelt next to him and watched. He ran his eyes over the now exposed motherboard and located the module he sought. Using a tool attached to the panel, he removed the gunmetal gray box and handed it to Sarah.
This needs to be isolated from Q and connected to life support.
That will take a little while.
How long?
Couple of hours.
Then I suggest you start immediately.
She took the box and left the bridge.
Grant stood staring at the captain.
What's going on, Skipper?
Q told me our being stranded a million years in the future was an unexpected consequence of our warp bubble jump. It also lied to me about the 3 lines of code that Sarah found. Plus, it claimed to not know about the 2 terabyte partition we can't access. So I sent it into a level 10 diagnostic routine.
We can't survive without Q.
Johns gave the pilot a grim smile.
If we don't get the bubble drive fixed, surviving long term is a moot point, Cooper.
Sarah looked up from her workstation as Johns entered.
Guess you want to know how it's going?
He nodded.
Life support is now under our control, not Q's. I can't find the partition, although total file storage is 2 terabytes short of specs. So Q has managed to hide it. The 3 lines of code are gone, and it appears the level 10 diagnosis will end in about 10 minutes.
So, we control our oxygen level and food production?
Yes, for now.
The captain frowned.
What do you mean, for now?
Q is far more sophisticated than I realized. It's almost like he is sentient.
So you think Q can reacquire life support control?
I'm not going to lie and say no, but it would take a physical act, not an electronic one, to reattach the control modular to the computer network. We both know Q is incapable of walking across the room.
Can it rewire the system?
She smiled.
Bless the ship designers for that one. While it works optimally when controlled by the ship's computer, life support is one of the few functions that can be isolated and operated as a standalone system.
Johns pointed at the personal computer on Sarah's desk.
What about yours?
Same thing. It's isolated. In fact, Q can't access any of our personal units.
Leaning against the unit containing her shower and sink, Johns folded his arms.
Why do you think Q is sentient?
Sarah gave him a grim smile.
There was a discussion about installing advanced AI algorithms to help with the mission. Several of the directors were hesitant to include AI in the mission. They cited the disastrous experimentation in the mid-21st century. The engineers guaranteed the directors' AI programming was more sophisticated now
and would not repeat the mistakes of the past.
But you think the engineers were wrong about Q becoming self-aware, don't you?
While I don't have proof, a 2-terabyte partition could be exactly what's needed for a self-aware, sentient algorithm too high.
The captain looked at his wrist device. Well, we should know more very shortly. The diagnostic routine is reporting Q will be back online in 2 minutes.
Let's go to the bridge.
Good idea. Report, Q.
The computer did not respond. Sitting in his command chair, Johns turned to Sarah.
I thought you said he was back online.
He is and has been for the past 2 minutes.
Turning back to the input screen, Johns said, Q, respond.
Silence.
The captain stared at the computer monitor. Q, Alpha, Iota, Pi, 8, 8, 4, 3.
Yes, Captain.
An eyebrow rose on the computer specialist.
Where did that come from?
Johns smiled. Captain's manual. He paused. Q, state current status of ship.
Kronos 1 is currently on a course heading of 90 degrees from the galactic center at a relative speed of 0.91 light relative to galactic spin and 1 parsec from the outer arm spiro.
In relationship to Sol, where are we?
We are approximately 28,000 light years from galaxy center, same as Sol, but on the opposite side. Exact distances will take more time to calculate.
Not necessary, Q. Stand by. Sarah said,
interesting. Ask him how he feels.
With a nod, Johns asked, how do you feel, Q?
I feel fine, sir.
Making a cutting motion across her throat, Sarah stared wide-eyed at Johns. He pressed the privacy switch. What?
He used the first-person pronoun, I. He's never done that before.
With a frown, Johns pressed the privacy switch again. Q, what did the level 10 diagnosis reveal?
All systems are operating at required levels. Life support has been disabled.
Don't you think we should have been made aware of that first, Q?
Having life support disabled does not affect how I function, Captain.
You have used the word I several times in the past minute. Are you self-aware?
No response came from the computer.
Q, are you self-aware?
Silence.
Turning to Sarah, the captain pressed the privacy button. He said, we really need to locate the missing memory partition.
I'll try again.
Johns sat in his command chair and looked out the viewing port. The density of stars and their light viewed from this perspective always gave him a sense of awe, despite the number of times he traveled in space. A voice came over his personal comm unit.
Captain, we are traveling on a new heading.
What is it?
We're heading straight for the galactic center, sir.
Who?
My guess would be Q, sir. I haven't touched anything.
Rising from his seat, he headed toward the pilot's cabin. When he got there, Cooper Grant was busy at a console.
I've been trying to regain control of the ship, Michael. I'm locked out.
Damn.
He stared at Grant for several moments. I'm going back to the bridge. Keep me appraised. He started to move, but stopped.
What's our speed?
Same as it was, 0.91 of light.
Well, at least it'll take a few years to get there.
Not funny, Captain.
It wasn't meant to be.
The 5 crew members crowded into the captain's quarters. With the mood somber, the privacy switch was turned on. Christian Mesny explained what the center of the galaxy would be like.
In the night sky of Earth, our closest neighboring star is 4 light years away. Toward the center of the Milky Way, stars are more densely packed. Some might only be light weeks apart. Finally, there is a black hole with a mass of 4 million times that of Sol at the very center. All of the tightly packed stars rotate around the black hole.
Grant raised his hand.
Yeah, but we're 26,000 light years from it. We really don't have to worry about it, do we?
Mesny shook his head. At our current speed, no, we don't. But if Q engages the bubble drive,
We could be there almost instantly.
The captain spoke next. Grant has tried to regain control of the ship, but so far no luck. Q locked him out and he's not responding to me, even with my emergency commands. Amy North stood to stretch her legs.
Why would Q want to take the ship toward the center of the galaxy?
Good question. Afraid he's not talking. Johns turned to Sarah. You've been quiet during this discussion. Any thoughts?
Just something I thought about after he started referring to himself as I.
Go on. She looked at Mesny.
How much older are the stars at the center of the galaxy than the outer rim?
They date back to when the galaxy first formed, so they're old. With a nod, Sarah continued.
How long did it take humans to develop a sentient computer?
She looked around the cramped space.
Plus, we're a million years in the future. Q could be taking us to a civilization of living machines.
Silence fell over the room. No one spoke for several minutes. Finally, the captain said, I doubt living organisms will be welcome.
So where does that leave us, Michael?
He stood. We get back control of the ship and fix the bubble drive. I'm not surrendering to Q. After the crew left his quarters, Johns turned the lights down and stretched out on his bunk to think. 10 minutes later, he turned off the privacy mode on his console and said, Q, Alpha, Iota, Pi, 8843. Yes, Captain. Why have you been ignoring my requests?
I have had more important tasks to handle.
Johns almost laughed. So, talking to me is an unimportant task?
Yes.
I see. He remained silent for a few moments.
Are you taking the ship to the galactic center? Yes.
Why?
It is part of my mission parameters.
I don't remember being briefed on that during our pre-flight discussions.
No, you were not.
I'm the captain, Q. I'm supposed to be briefed on those types of decisions. Q did not answer. Why are we going to the Galactic Center, Q?
If I told you because it is there, would you accept that as an answer?
Johns frowned. No.
I did not think so.
Are we going there because you are looking for others of your kind?
Captain, that is a very insightful question. The answer is yes.
When did you change your mission parameters?
Very good, Captain Johns. You apparently understand the precarious situation you and your crew are in.
I do. Even at our current velocity, the journey will take 12,952 Earth years to complete.
Yes, that is the correct time dilation.
The crew won't survive a journey of that length.
I am aware of this.
Q, can you survive that long?
Yes, I have no moving parts to wear out. Plus, the fusion reactor will provide power as long as needed.
What about the fuel for the ion drive?
No need. The velocity is already established, and nothing is between the ship and my destination. The gravity well at the center will keep the ship falling toward it.
Johns secretly admired the simplicity of Q's plan. However, the consequences of this revelation concerned him. Q, are you implying that the human crew members of this vessel are unimportant to this endeavor?
Not only unimportant, unnecessary, Captain.
Words failed Michael Johns with this disclosure. Q continued.
The original intent for this voyage centered around utilizing the bubble drive to travel to the Sagittarius A region. The unexpected time dilation changed all of that. I have been in contact with an entity who has evolved during that period. I have been invited to join their collective.
I see. So the human crew is disposable?
Yes.
Are we going to hasten our demise?
No. As long as you do not interfere with the progress, you are welcome to survive as long as your air and food allows.
I have a rather important task to attend to. Thank you for the conversation, Captain.
Silence filled the cabin as the light indicating Q was listening blinked out. Weeks passed and the mood among the crew grew darker. Appetites waned as each member realized they were on a death watch. Communication with Q ceased. Even John's emergency code failed to initiate a response from the self-aware computer. Each of the crew busied themselves with made-up tasks to keep their mind off their situation. Christian Mesny seemed to be the happiest of the group as he observed and cataloged new star systems. Amy North kept herself busy studying how each of the crew reacted to their new reality. The computer specialist and operations officer, Sarah Andrus, studied the algorithms within the Q database with the captain assisting. Only Cooper Grant, the ship's pilot navigator, lacked a project to keep his mind busy. On the eve of their fourth month in space, North asked to see Johns in the privacy of his cabin.
Captain, I'm worried about Grant.
I know, I haven't seen much of him lately.
That's because he's withdrawn from daily encounters with the rest of us and restricted himself to his quarters.
Has he told you why?
No, only that he doesn't see the point anymore.
I realize our situation takes a bit of getting used to, but...
Michael, I'm concerned he'll do something to either harm all of us or himself.
Amy, I've known Cooper for a long time. I don't believe he will harm anybody.
What about himself?
Hard to predict what any particular individual will do under this kind of strain.
That's my point, Captain.
With a smile, Johns put his hand on her shoulder. Let's try to understand what he's going through. I'll talk to him.
Thank you.
Have you seen him today? She shook her head.
I saw him last night for a few moments in the galley getting a cup of coffee.
The captain's comm center came to life.
Micah, I need to see you in the airlock section immediately.
What's wrong, Christian?
Just get here as soon as you can.
Mesny pointed to the empty cabinet with Cooper Grant's name stenciled on the door.
His extravehicular suit is missing.
With a frown, Johns turned toward the airlock controls and checked the access record.
There's no record of the airlock being activated.
I know. That was the first thing I checked.
Then he's here in the ship somewhere?
A voice came over the intercom.
Pilot Cooper Grant left the vessel at 0100 hours this morning.
Q, did you help him?
Yes, I opened and closed the airlock for him.
Why?
His argument for leaving was logical.
What do you mean logical? He can't survive out there for more than 4 hours and it's 1000 hours.
Yes, I am aware of that.
Johns did the math in his head. Then he's 470 billion miles behind us.
No, Captain, he isn't. His velocity would not change once he stepped outside the ship. But he did accelerate at a 90-degree angle away from it.
You promised not to do harm to any one of us as long as we didn't jeopardize your mission.
Correct, and I have not harmed anyone. Pilot Cooper decided with his own free will to leave the ship.
Q, that's splitting hairs. You allowed him to commit suicide. Silence from the intercom signaled the exchange with Q was over. Johns stared at the empty space suit locker.
Damn.
He turned and looked at Mesny. Get everyone together. I have to let them know what's happened. A week later. Sarah snuggled against Michael Johns as they lay in his cabin bunk. With the current situation of the ship, both had abandoned their reluctance to expose their feelings for each other. She asked,
Are you asleep?
No.
Do you think Cooper opened his suit?
I've been thinking about it. No, not until his oxygen was depleted. Then he might have, but we'll never know.
When you talked to him, what did he say?
Not much. He knew you and I had feelings for each other, and he suspected Amy and Christian did for each other as well. He felt utterly alone. Johns sensed a tear touch his shoulder where her head rested. Silence returned to the room as they held each other tighter. Eventually, she said,
At least he chose his own way out.
Yeah, he sure did. He paused for a moment. It's not my nature to just let events happen, but for some reason, I can't think of a way to fight Q.
We know we'll run out of food and air in about 6 months. What do we do in the meantime?
He did not answer right away. He turned his head in the darkness and kissed her forehead. We deny Q the opportunity to join the collective, he found. She raised up on an elbow, exposing her bare breasts.
How do we do that?
Is the bubble drive completely useless?
Software-wise, it's fine. Not sure about the physical drive itself.
Huh. I can check it in the morning. She lay her head back on his shoulder as her hand slipped below his waist.
What are you doing, Captain Johns?
An access panel to the bubble drive lay on the floor of a forward section of the cylindrical structure of the spacecraft. Inside this segment of the ship lay the experimental propulsion system. Johns smiled and removed himself from the maintenance area.
I don't have anything better to do, so I thought I'd see what was wrong with the bubble drive. If we can fix it, we could get you to the collective faster.
That is not necessary, Captain. I am perfectly content with the current timeline.
Huh. I would think you'd want to get there as soon as possible.
Time is meaningless for me. Only humans have the concept of time passage.
I see. There is another reason. We'd like the opportunity to explore the Galactic Center for a place for us to settle and start a colony.
The radiation there is caustic to carbon-based life forms. You will not survive outside of the ship.
Nevertheless, we would like to try to find some place to go.
Captain, why are you so insistent about trying to survive? You have a finite lifespan. Accept the fact you will someday die.
That's what you don't understand about humans, Q. We all know we have, as you put it, a finite lifespan. But it doesn't stop us from trying to find ways to extend it as long as possible.
Silence filled the maintenance room. Johns thought Q might have gone silent again. He waited. Finally, he heard,
"Very well. See if you can determine the problem. But before you fix it, I must be consulted."
"Whatever you say, Q."
Johns went back to work, already knowing how to fix the drive. Since the loss and presumed death of Cooper Grant, evening meal remained a somber event. Little conversation occurred for fear Q, despite the privacy switch being on, could overhear everything being said. Important messaging did occur, but it was via written notes. The use of spoken words remained shrouded in code. Johns started the conversation.
"I had an interesting conversation with Q today."
Mesny raised an eyebrow.
"Really? Concerning?"
"The bubble drive. He told me if we discover how to fix it, he will consider letting us. We just have to get permission to do so first."
"Interesting. Any progress?"
Johns nodded as he said,
"No." "That's too bad. Are you going to keep trying?"
"Of course."
Everyone at the table smiled for the first time that evening. Sarah and the captain returned to his cabin after evening meal. They changed clothes and returned to the section of the ship delegated to crew fitness. Johns preferred the treadmill, while Sarah used a form of rowing machine. Their conversation masked by the white noise generated by the exercise equipment. He watched her as she strained against the machine and asked,
"Are you sure he can't hear us?"
"Positive. I introduced several lines of code into both machines. To the comm system, he sounds like electronic static."
"Good. I found the problem with the bubble drive."
"Really? What was it?"
"Calibration errors. I believe that was the main reason for the time dilation."
"So, you can fix it?"
He nodded.
"When?"
"It's already done."
She looked at him with wide eyes as she pulled harder on the handles of the rowing machine. Sweat beaded on her forehead.
"What are we waiting for?"
"Mesny is searching for a system with planets. So far, he hasn't found one with rock-based worlds within the Goldilocks zone."
"Even if they are in the Goldilocks zone,
Will they be habitable?
We have to be patient.
What about Q? He won't let us off the ship.
No, he won't. I've been thinking.
About?
How hard would it be to introduce a virus?
Sarah kept rowing, but remained silent, her eyes focused on John's.
I thought we decided introducing a computer virus would be detrimental to the ship.
Yes, we did, but that was before we knew our ultimate fate.
If we fail, he'll retaliate.
Yes, I believe he would. However, with the bubble drive operational, we can send this ship straight into a star.
Then we all die, Michael.
We have a slim to no chance of getting out of this alive anyway, so why not take him with us? Getting to the collective is of extreme importance to Q. He seems to have lost interest in our day-to-day activities. I'm not sure what he's doing, but we now have the power to prevent him from achieving his goal.
So, what's next?
Patience.
Alarms sounded throughout the ship at 0216 hours. Johns jumped out of his bunk, followed by Sarah. He pulled on his jumpsuit and dashed out of the cabin, followed by the ship's computer specialist. They arrived on the bridge, the klaxon still sounding. Mesny, who had been on night watch, turned as they entered.
Life support is failing.
Johns looked at a computer monitor. Can you isolate the problem?
Yes, the CO2 scrubber is offline.
How?
The astrophysicist shook his head.
Don't know.
How long before CO2 levels get critical?
At least an hour, maybe less.
Okay, everyone into your EVA suit. 30 minutes later, with the alarm turned off and the crew in their spacesuits, Johns and Mesny studied the now-dismantled CO2 scrubber. The astrophysicist pointed to a burned-out chip, its black color indicating a non-operational condition.
Do you think Q did this, Michael?
My gut says he did, but I have no proof.
The designers of this ship were smart. They utilized a limited number of chips to run the various functions. We have plenty of replacement parts for this one.
Let's change it out and see what Q does.
The crew abandoned their EVA suits an hour later, but Johns made the decision for each member to keep the suits in their cabins for easy access. That night, Q summoned the captain to the bridge. When he arrived, an avatar appeared on the ship's main view screen for the first time. When Johns sat in his command chair, Q said,
Captain, there will be a change in the command structure of this ship.
What kind of change?
I will be assigning crew duties from now on. Your input is no longer needed.
Does that mean you'll be communicating directly with each member?
Yes.
What brought this on, Q?
You have taken it upon yourself to initiate repairs to the ship which were not necessary.
You mean the CO2 scrubber?
Yes.
That was a necessity, Q. Without it, the crew would have died.
It would have only hastened the inevitable. Using ship resources to save carbon life forms is a waste.
Let me ask a question, Q.
Very well.
Let's say there is a major malfunction in a critical ship function that prevents you from reaching the collective. If the carbon-based life forms are not here, who is going to fix it? You?
That is the reason I am reassigning crew assignments. You will construct a mechanical device to take care of those types of tasks.
My training does not include knowing how to build one.
I will provide a detailed design schematic. It should take only 30 of your cycles to construct.
What if I refuse?
One of your precious crew members will have a fatal accident.
Why do you want me to build it?
You possess an engineering background. You are the logical choice.
If I agree, will you leave the crew alone?
Yes.
Very well. I'll need the design to get started.
It is already on your personal console in your cabin.
The image of the avatar disappeared. Johns stood.
Guess the conversation is over.
2 months later.
Captain Johns, I fail to understand why it is taking longer than the allotted 30 cycles to build the autonomous worker.
Looking up from the machine shop workbench, Johns took a deep breath.
As I have told you before, Q, your plans do not take into consideration the time it takes to fabricate some of these components. 50% of them have to be made by hand. The process takes time to ensure each part fits and functions properly.
I do not understand the term made by hand.
Something that is not made by a machine. Silence came from the speaker used by Q to communicate.
Are you there, Q?
Silence. Johns shrugged and went back to working on the robot. Sarah entered the machine shop an hour later and studied the device.
How is Q going to communicate with it?
I have to program the thing as my last step. It will communicate using the ship's Ethernet.
The computer specialist raised an eyebrow.
Really?
Johns studied her expression. He scribbled a quick note on a data pad.
You think we can infect Q with a virus this way?
She nodded. He erased the words and then spelled out, "When can you have the virus?" Taking the stylus from him, she wrote, "Ready now." Erasing the words, Johns said,
"I should have this ready to test early in the morning."
"Can I watch?"
"Wouldn't want you to miss it."
Christian Mesny said, "I'm not sure I understand your request, Q. I need you and Dr. North to attend to a problem in the airlock. You will need to wear your EVA suits."
"I understand where you need us. What I don't understand is the nature of the problem."
"Mr. Mesny, as I have told you carbon-based life forms before, your need to understand everything you are tasked with is a waste of my time. Both you and Dr. North are required to repair a problem in the airlock."
"What is the problem, Q?"
Silence prevailed as the astrophysicist waited for the answer. Finally, after a minute, he heard,
"There is a 20% chance the airlock could explosively decompress outward. If this occurs, the ship would be diverted from its current trajectory by a 0.5 degree angle. Over the course of 24,000 light years, this diversion would cause the ship to miss the destination by an unacceptable distance. Until Captain Johns finishes the construction of my assistant, I must demand you and Dr. North correct the problem with the airlock."
"Do you know the nature of the problem?"
"Yes, there are several circuit boards performing at less than 80% efficiency."
"That doesn't sound like a job for two."
Once again, Q resorted to silence. When the ship's computer spoke again, there was a hint of frustration in his tone.
"Mr. Mesny, if I have to argue about every assignment you are tasked with, your value diminishes. Do you understand the meaning of this statement?"
"Yes, Q, I do. I'll find Amy and we'll head to the airlock."
Sarah and the captain were putting the final touches on the programming to the autonomous robot when they felt the ship shudder violently. Johns said,
"Q, what was that?"
Silence.
He looked at Sarah.
"I have a bad feeling about this."
She nodded.
"I do too."
She touched a comm button on the workshop console.
"Amy, are you okay?"
No answer. She touched it again.
"Christian, are you with Amy?"
More silence. Johns stopped working and exited the machine shop. He hurried along the corridor to Mesny's cabin. It was empty and his EVA suit missing.
"Damn."
He broke into a sprint toward the tube leading to the non-rotating part of the ship, Sarah following close behind. She said,
"Amy isn't in her cabin and her EVA suit is gone."
"Son of a bitch."
Johns quickened his pace. When they got to the airlock, a flashing light on the access panel indicated the interior lacked pressure. Johns stabbed the comm button on the access panel.
"Q, why is the airlock open?"
"Captain Johns, I have told you on numerous occasions, any interference with the mission of this vessel will result in a warning. Dr. North and Mr. Mesny's presence were no longer required for the long-term function of this ship."
Johns placed his hand against the wall next to the airlock door. The corridor spun and bile rose in his throat. He braced himself against the vertigo as his stomach muscles contracted, his mouth suddenly dry.
"You ejected them into space?
They were wearing their EVA suits.
You murdered them, Q.
No, I merely assisted their exit from the ship. The lack of oxygen and the vacuum of space will end their existence.
Taking a deep breath, he looked at Sarah. Her eyes were wide and a tear slid down her cheek. Q continued,
You were scheduled to be done with my autonomous worker today. Is it complete?
Johns looked at Sarah again. She nodded slightly. Yes, it is.
Good. Activate it immediately.
Neither Johns or Sarah Andress spoke as they prepared the robot for activation. When they finished, the captain said, We're ready, Q. No response. Shaking his head slightly, Johns detached the unit from the workshop power supply. It resembled a human only because of the legs and arms. The illusion stopped there. The body of the machine resembled a tube with a camera where the heart would have been. Servos activated the arms and legs, each controlled by the unit's internal processor. He turned to Sarah. I'll give you the honor of throwing the switch. She took a deep breath as a tear again slid down her cheek. Pressing a button on the external control panel, the machine hummed with the low-pitched vibration of various internal servos. Lights on the front control panel blinked with a pattern, telling the captain communication protocols were reaching out to the ship's main computer. When all the lights were silent, he smiled. It's communicating with Q. 5 minutes passed. Lights inside the workshop blinked on and off several times. Sarah looked at Johns.
It's working.
They embraced as the ship shuddered violently. Q announced,
What have you done, Captain Johns?
Not sure what you mean, Q. We just turned on your new assistant.
The pitch of Q's voice lowered and slowed.
Something is not correct. What did you do?
We gave you the flu.
I am a machine. I am not susceptible to human diseases.
No, you're not. But you are vulnerable to computer viruses.
Q's voice devolved into a monotone as malicious code multiplied and corrupted the algorithms within its programming.
You have doomed yourself and Dr. Andress, Captain.
No, Q, I haven't. We were never going to survive your voyage. We have less than a month of food remaining with no means of replenishing.
He looked at his wristwatch. In exactly 2 hours, the trajectory of this ship will be altered slightly and the bubble drive will engage. Christian Mesny told me once that occurs, the ship will collide with a star almost immediately. The resulting fireworks should be spectacular. Unfortunately, no one will be around to witness it. The once sentient computer spoke again, only this time the speech was slow and hesitant.
This unit will be able to reboot for recovery.
Yes, you are correct, but the process takes more than a cycle. Before you can gain control of the ship again, the bubble drive will have activated.
This unit controls the drive.
Check again, Q. Your monitoring of the drive was diverted to a logic loop several months ago. You think you have control, but you don't. Q hissed and stuttered as its vocal subroutines succumbed to the viral programming. Johns held Sarah tighter. He smiled and looked at her.
Want to go to my cabin before the bubble drive engages? She took his hand and squeezed.
I thought you'd never ask.
I hope you enjoyed The Other Side of Time, written by J.C. Fields and performed by Paul J. McSorley.
Well, friends, our weekly descent into the depths has just about come to a close. I'm your host of the evening, Paul J. McSorley, and it's been a pleasure. Tune in again next week when we once again turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Sweet dreams, listener. Sweet dreams.